Looking out the window at this burnt brown barren landscape, it's hard to believe this was once a lush green dinosaur's paradise. A humid floodplain covered with expanses of giant ferns and pine forests. I'm Belinda Smith, and I'm heading towards the tiny town of Winton, population 800. It's a 15-hour drive northwest of Brisbane, and over the coming days, I'm going to follow a bunch of paleontologists and fossil enthusiasts as they chase dinosaurs across the Aussie outback. The race is on to dig out and relocate some dinosaur footprints unearthed by recent floods. These extraordinary specimens are a once-in-a-lifetime find, and even though they've lasted the best part of 100 million years, the sandstone is fragile and might not survive another bout of heavy rain. But before embarking on this ambitious dig, I want to find out more about the dinosaurs that once roamed these plains. So I'm stopping by the Australian Age of Dinosaurs Museum, just outside Winton, to meet a new addition to their collection. Hi, Steve.
Well, how you going?
Oh, good, thanks. How are you?
Very well,
good to see you again.
See you too.
This is Steve Porripat, a paleontologist from Swinburne University in Melbourne, who is also up here to work on the dig. We're in the museum's lab, where they prep the fossils.
In the lab at the moment, we have mostly pieces just from one dinosaur.
Meet Judy.
We suspect it's a Diamantinosaurus. Basically, what we think we have is the most complete sauropod dinosaur, the most complete long-necked dinosaur ever found in Australia. So it's remarkable straight off the bat for that simple reason.
Judy was found by a local farmer in 2017 and named after his mum.
What we have is a section of the neck. It's about 4 metres long, so it's a huge neck. It's not the whole neck, though. We know there are at least two vertebrae missing from each end.
How big do you think Judy was from, say, nose to tail?
Well, we estimated it that it would be about 12 to 13 metres, just based on the fact that we have a neck section here that's close to 4 metres long, and that's not even the full neck. We know from most of the specimens that we've found in the Winton area that our sauropods would have had probably slightly longer necks than they had tails. So built close to something like Brachiosaurus from Jurassic Park.
Can you explain to me what we're standing next to, please, Steve?
So what we have here is a replica of the front leg of Diamantinosaurus matildae. So it was found in 2006, and it's one of the most complete sauropods ever found in Australia. In terms of the front legs, at least one of them is complete, maybe missing one bone, and that would be it. But then we get down to, I guess, the business end, the actual foot.
The largest sauropods were called titanosaurs, and they were the biggest animals ever to walk the earth. Diamantinosaurus was a titanosaur that grew up to 18 metres long and could tip the scales at 23 tonnes, weighing more than four fully grown African elephants. Their foot bones were arranged a bit like an elephant's too. They essentially walked up on their tiptoes and were supported by a tough pad of connective tissue which formed the sole of their foot.
So what it means is that when we find the footprints of these dinosaurs, we expect them to be sort of semicircular or maybe even horseshoe-shaped in really advanced titanosaurs. And so I guess even before we found footprints of sauropods out here, we had an idea of what their footprints should look like. And the cool thing is that the footprints are confirming some of our interpretations that we've made based just on the bones. And that's where we're hoping to eventually work out, well, which one of our sauropods made the footprints that we're finding.
The first Australian dinosaur bone was discovered in 1903, and since then, paleontologists have found another 20 species. They include Qantassaurus, which was found in southern Australia and named after the national airline, and Muttaburrasaurus, which was found not too far from here, near the town of, you guessed it, Muttaburra. But we don't just have bones in Australia. Between Western Australia and here in Queensland, this country also has some of the best preserved dinosaur tracks in the world. But these newly discovered footprints are in crumbling sandstone in a creek bed, and that's what makes this project so challenging. How do you lift 95 million year old dinosaur tracks without smashing them to bits? We'll soon find out.
Let's roll.
Ready to go?
Yep. And I think Tim's... You're gonna lead, Tim, yeah? You want us to bring up the rear? Turn right, and then turn left when you see the sign. Come on, Curry.
All right, let's go.
Yep.
Steve and I head to the very basic shearers' quarters on a nearby property to meet the rest of the dig team. They'll call this home for the next 2 weeks.
How you going, mate?
Hi.
Hi, I'm Belinda.
Good, welcome here. How long are you with us for?
Here till Wednesday.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really.
Good, hope you enjoy it as much as we hope too. Steve, good to see you again too.
All up, there are around 20 people here. It's a varied bunch, ranging from landscape gardeners and retirees to paleontologists with decades of experience. But the one thing we all have in common is a passionate love for science. This is Mike, a former science teacher.
That's me and my wife, Pip, over there. She's the cook. Won the Phillip Island Landcare Rabbit Cooking Championship twice in a row.
Dinner tonight isn't rabbit. It's actually delicious chicken. But there's plenty of excitement around the table. For these volunteers, this could be one of the most important digs they ever do. After dinner, we head outside to watch the blazing sunset.
It's coming round the bend.
Out here, the land is so flat and desolate, you can see the horizon in every direction. The sense of space is almost overwhelming. And on a moonless, cloudless night like tonight, the Milky Way lights up the vast sky.
I hear that whistle blowing. I hang my head and cry.
Next morning, everyone is raring to go to the footprints. They're about a half-hour drive away on a nearby property called Karula.
Okay, everyone, just to take one, we'll pass it on.
But first, an occupational health and safety briefing.
So a couple of housekeeping things.
With a difference.
I'm Trish, I'm the operations manager for the museum. Everybody calls me Tricky. Just here at Elderslie, I just want to bring up a few things around this quarters. Toilets are fenced, if you've noticed. Also, doors need to be shut, because stock really love drinking toilet water. And wildlife, this is a property, you're in outback Queensland, I'm sure you're all accustomed to being bush. We're heating up, we're getting snakes, spiders, redback's probably gonna be your arch nemesis. We've got a bush dunny at this next site, which is a wooden box, and redbacks love it. And you can't use it until I come back with an empty can of surface spray. Are there any questions? Pretty stock standard work health and safety stuff, isn't it? It's a pretty exciting project.
I grab Steve as he walks out the door to hear the day's plan.
I guess the first thing is to get out to site safely. Once we're there, we want to start covering up some of these tracks, probably with plaster, and then hopefully safely removing at least portions of them. While that's going on, because we won't need everyone doing that at once, I and a few of my colleagues will probably start taking measurements of some of the tracks so that we can actually start doing some of the science on the site as well.
And off we go. But little did we know the biggest hazard getting to the site would be this. So right now we're driving at 20 kilometres an hour along a dusty road behind four cows which are running in front of us, and they won't get off the road. Oh, there's loads of them now. So our chances of getting past them are slim to none until they get off the road. 15 slow minutes later. Oh, and we're at the dig site. So we'll just pull up next to the other cars from our convoy, and there's a pit just to our left. And not much else, to be honest. Many in the group are seeing the footprints for the first time. And even for a non-expert like me, they really are mind-blowing.
Your reaction's the same as mine. Just like, you don't know how to, you know, contain the excitement in any ways.
I just want to take a bath in one.
In front of me is a 50-metre-long swathe of sandstone stamped with what look like metre-wide craters. These are sauropod tracks, and I'm literally walking in a dinosaur's footprints. My big boots look tiny by comparison. Most of the sauropod footprints are set in pretty solid rock, but there's a patch up one end that looks like a few have trampled around. This trample zone is starting to crumble and is what we're here to save.
That might be Mikey. I think it is. So this is the property owner.
Mm. Yeah.
Mikey, you want tea or coffee, though?
Tea. Black tea. And two sugar.
Yeah. Oh, aren't you sweet enough?
No, apparently not.
I'm Mike Elliott. We're in Corolla, where the tracks are here.
So how big is Corolla?
It's only 30,000 acres, but we have Lovell. It's another 28,000 acres. And then we've got Bulby Archvale, which is, nearly 470,000 acres all up.
When were the tracks discovered and who made the discovery first?
Well, it would have been 2 years ago, I think. We had an old caretaker bloke here and he just said that he reckons they're dinosaur tracks, and we thought, silly old fella, you know. And believe it or not, when we're mustering, we've been over this mound of rock for been doing it for bloody 30 years, and I never thought of dinosaur tracks, and the paleontologist had a look and he said, yeah, they're dinosaur tracks, all right. And now they're cleaned up and, yeah, we can see what's going on after the floods we've had last year and this year. Well, certainly moved a lot of dirt away from the banks and you can see where the tracks really are. But it's, I love dinosaurs.
And growing up, did your dad impart that love of dinosaurs to you?
Yeah, he did, because I think both of us used to ride around, we were mustering, and I think we spent more time looking on the ground than what we did mustering these flaming sheep.
Why is the Winton area so great for dinosaur bones and footprints?
The town of Winton sits on top of a geological unit called the Winton Formation. It's about 98 to 95 million years old and 100 kilometres in every direction from Winton, and more in some of them, you're still on that Winton Formation. And as a result, there's the potential to find dinosaurs all the way through it. There are rocks of the right age, but moreover, they were formed in a floodplain. And floodplains periodically are inundated with sediment. Sediment's good at burying bodies and therefore good at potentially preserving fossils. And the thing is, we also know that this area would have been really attractive to dinosaurs, especially big plant-eating ones, because there was so much vegetation here. The forest was dominated by conifers. In the understory, you would have had primitive flowering plants, also ferns, and then a minor component of the fauna, but still a prominent one, ginkgos, banneter tails, an extinct group, and also horsetails. So both ginkgos and horsetails no longer live in Australia. They still do live in the northern hemisphere, but they were here 98 to 95 million years ago. And I guess because we have all of those plants, the dinosaurs just love this area. And so we find their bones as well in the same sediments.
Hey, g'day. I'm David Elliott, and Mike's father and my father were cousins. Yeah, you worked that out. I don't know what it makes us really, but yeah, but I've known Mike ever since we were kids.
Like Mike, David's also a farmer and has found his fair share of fossils. David and his wife Judy started the Australian Age of Dinosaurs Museum in 2002. And yes, this is the Judy who had that Diamantinosaurus fossil named after her. Their son, Bobby, discovered it. And the pressure's on. David's only got 2 weeks to move the crumbling footprints. He needs to do it while the group of volunteers is here. It's too big a job on his own.
We really want to preserve the integrity of the tracks. We don't want to just tear them up and go and plonk them on the ground somewhere. You know, they have to be done a certain way. We're going to relocate the whole trackway to the museum because the rock is only about a foot thick. You know, it's not that thick. So that's easy, isn't it, really? That sounds easy. 2 months, but
I'll give it a go. It doesn't sound easy at all. There's no instruction manual for a job like this. Before we arrived, David tried drilling holes through the rock and lifting the slab on steel rods.
The sandstone is so dry and so fragile, it's just crumbling. And I thought, I looked at it and I could see it cracking up everywhere, and I'm thinking, you know, we're going to lift this, we're going to put it on a trailer, we're going to drive it about 90 kilometres up to the museum, lift it off again, try and get it into position, and it's not going to fall apart. And I thought, by the time we get to the other end, it'll be in a bucket. But even that, we can't just leave it here because that's still a find of a lifetime. So now we're going to leave the dirt in the middle. Like I say, it hasn't got any information anyway. And we're going to do plaster jackets around the rings of the tracks. We're just treating those tracks now like big dinosaur bones.
Encasing the footprints in plaster will hopefully hold them together as they are lifted and trucked off to the museum. And before the crew can do this, they need to chip away under the footprints a bit. Not with hand picks and brushes like you might see in movies, though.
One toy doesn't work, go for another.
Yeah, absolutely, go for the big guns.
Well, we started off with the chainsaw. And that was all right, but we see there's drips of oil going all over the fossils and stuff that we had to clean off, and it was slow and it's dangerous. So we gave up on that and we tried a big rock saw. So from there, we went to a 9-inch angle grinder with a diamond wheel on it.
I think everyone might need earmuffs.
And that worked okay.
Let's not forget the jackhammer. The power tools are chipping away at the earth, leaving us shrouded in rock dust. Once the heavy work is done, volunteers, armed with picks and trowels, scoop the sediment out. This leaves the footprints attached to the ground by a thin base, which can be fairly easily snapped when it's time to move them.
We've had a surveyor here, so we've surveyed the site, so we've got all the exact heights of every track and every spot. So as we're putting the tracks down again, they'll be in exactly the same height and angle to each other as they are here.
The detail's just exquisite, the way that you can see the ripples in the mud from where the sauropod foot pushed into the sticky mud. It's incredible.
Yeah, and so much information there. You can see the pressure of each toe as a dint in the rock. I think that's pretty good. Pretty magical.
Okay, everybody, it's lunchtime!
They didn't even look up.
No, apparently fossils are more important than themselves.
I'm sitting by the dry creek bed eating my sandwich. It's so hot and dry that the bread gets staler with each bite. It's hard to believe that this place gets enough rain to flood, but in March 2018, Winton received more than 100 millimetres, or 5 inches of rain, in one day. Those floods broke up some of these dinosaur tracks, and no one's sure when it might happen again. Climate change has made rainfall in this area extremely unpredictable. This is why we urgently need to get what's left of the trackway to safety. Apart from a few museum staff, no one's being paid for this work. They're here because they want to be. Most have paid their own way and travelled nearly 2,000 kilometres as the crow flies.
My name's Wendy White and I'm here basically because they let me. I'll do anything I get to do to play with fossils. It's so cool.
This looks like a giant ancient jigsaw puzzle of sorts.
It's very much, in fact, Trish calls it puzzling, which means finding all the rocks that have fallen off the edge of the little ledge here and working out how to fit them back in so that when they do remove this and we can all plaster jacket it together, we've got all of the bits there to make to do all the science and make it look good. So this is a dry creek bed. It's been fairly droughty out here. So what happens is as the water runs through, when the water is running, it wears away the edge of this, erodes it, and slowly moves the rocks that direction. We have to walk down, find them, and then put them back together in the cliff. So it's a jigsaw puzzle with a few bits missing sometimes.
And putting it back together, will that give the experts, the paleontologists, a few clues as to what it might be, do you reckon?
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty sure it's a sauropod because there aren't any too many things with feet that big. So I reckon it probably is, but yeah, it'll give them clues not only about what it is, but how it moved and how it lived and... Because it's not often you get clues about live dinosaurs. We get clues about where they died and how they died, but footprints tell us more about how they lived.
It's not just sauropod tracks here. There's also a set of tiny three-toed footprints, about 4 or 5 centimetres wide. I swear they look like they were made by a goose, but they were left by an itty-bitty insect eater from a group of dinosaurs called theropods. Then there are also some slightly larger tracks, roughly 15 centimetres wide. These were made by an ornithopod, a plant-eating dinosaur around the size of an emu.
OK, day over, eh?
Yeah. Have you heard what the rundown for the whole day was?
No.
We've done some measurements on some of the little ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were a bit worried that there were two animals side by side.
Yeah.
Actually seems to be just one. So we've got 15 steps all in a row from just one animal.
One animal?
Mm-hmm. Which means we'll be able to get its approximate size. We'll be able to calculate its approximate speed. And we're gradually working on, there are some bigger ones from an ornithopod.
Mm.
They're a little less clear in terms of finding the actual trackway of that animal. But we think we have two of them side by side.
Right. Okay.
So complete contrast to the other one. And they're bigger animals, taking longer strides. We just need to work out exactly how long they were. So we think we missed a few somewhere. So, yeah, we'll keep looking.
Keep looking, but,
It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. And we've David took some measurements on the sauropod footprints. We checked a few of them.
Mm.
They're bang on. By tomorrow, we might have a good estimate how big it was too.
Oh, so, fair dinkum, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Good news. Mm-hmm. Good news. Hey, isn't it strange how you can see how the mud's being pushed up in front of the track, eh? It's amazing, eh? Really amazing.
For that to turn to stone in the last 95 million years.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Thanks, Mikey.
You can also see how mud was sucked up under the sauropod's heel as it lifted its foot and dropped back as a blob in the footprint. This feature makes these sauropod tracks quite the find.
Does anyone want an egg?
It's breakfast time on day two of the dig. Last night, Steve and his colleagues crunched their data, and I want to find out more about the dinosaurs that left the daintiest prints.
We think the animal was only about 25 centimetres tall at the hips, so tiny, like chicken-sized, and also it seems to have been moving at about 10 to 11 kilometres per hour, so definitely not at full tilt, but moving, you know, at a fair pace, especially considering it's crossing a mud flat. But it probably wouldn't have wanted to stop because it would have gotten bogged. By contrast, we tried to work out how fast the ornithopod was moving. Didn't really work too well because we couldn't actually get enough footprints in a row. But the animal there, minimum height 50 centimetres at the hips, we actually think it's probably taller. The sauropod's a lot clearer, and that's really cool. So with the sauropods, the back footprints are about 90 centimetres long, so sizable. And each of those are 3.3 metres from the next one. Based on that, you would imagine, well, the animal's probably got to be at least 3.3 metres tall at the hips to take such a long stride, so fairly sizable. And of course, because it's a long-necked sauropod, the head would be even higher. But then based on the distance between the footprints, we can again calculate the approximate speed, and in this case, it's going at a nice slow pace, less than 5 k's an hour, probably about 4.8.
It's now late afternoon on day three, and it's been a particularly long day of digging and plastering. But the time has finally come to see if David's plan is working. They're trying to lift the first piece of sauropod track away from the rock where it's been sitting for the past 95 million years. With David overseeing...
Ready? One, two, three. Oh.
Four volunteers gently wiggle a metre-long banana-shaped piece of footprint free from its base and roll it over.
Be able to just tip that gently and don't do it fast, really slow. Okay?
Just like that. I expect cheers and celebration, but it's been such a hot and tiring day that the mood was mostly of relief. Smiles all round though.
Good job.
That's a nice clean crack, see?
See, you owe me one.
No, it is.
David.
No, you don't.
How do you feel?
Well, I'm going to be really feeling really good in about 2 weeks' time when hopefully most of this is pulled out.
Righto.
But that works, yep. And everything's worked so far, hasn't it? Say by about Saturday, I'm hoping we should have all the plastering done. You can definitely see where we're going anyway.
I sadly had to leave the next day, but it's now a couple of weeks later and I meet up with Steve in his comfortable, climate-controlled office in Melbourne. So how did the rest of the footprint excavation go?
It went really well. All of the jacketing was completed, which was fantastic. So all that fragile section is now taken care of, and all the jackets were pulled up and taken back to the museum as well. To get it all out of the ground to make sure that it's safe from future floods is fantastic.
Could you identify the species of sauropod that made those big tracks?
So my suspicion is it is going to be a Diamantinosaurus. It seems to be the most common sauropod we're finding out here based on our limited sample size so far. And it seems to fit with its anatomy. And what we're going to do, we'll make 3D models of the whole animal, put the skeleton inside it, and then scale it to those footprints and see exactly whether or not it fits.
And how big was the animal that made the prints compared to Judy?
Judy is not a fully grown sauropod dinosaur. She's probably about 12 to 13 metres long. Matilda, another Diamantinosaurus, the name-bearing specimen, that animal is probably pushing 16 metres long. The trackmaker, I think, has to be a bit bigger than that, based on the size of the footprints. I suspect it's probably pushing 18 metres in length and probably 3.6 to 4 metres tall at the hips. So we do have a very, very few sauropod specimens in Winton that actually come from an animal about that size. They haven't been described yet. So could be a Diamantinosaurus, just a bigger one than we have so far described.
This excavation is more than a triumph for the museum. It's a scientific success. Steve and his crew will soon publish their findings in an academic journal. It's now been a few months since the tracks were lifted. And just as well, in recent weeks, the flooding rains have once again hit Winton, cutting off the town. Mike's property, Corulla, copped 20 inches, or 50 centimetres, over about a week, and torrents raced down the creek where the dinosaur footprints were found. It's unlikely the fragile part of the trackway would have survived such an assault. And this is certainly not the last of it. It's a wide brown land out there. People like David will unearth more bones and footprints, and paleontologists like Steve will add chapters to Australia's dinosaur story. I'm Belinda Smith. The Chase was made in collaboration with the BBC World Service. It was produced by Maria Tickle, with sound engineers Angie Grant and Richard Gervin. We hope you've enjoyed the ride.